Well, our moms think we're funny.
Mm-hmm. Now, I say bodies, but some of them were so, like, decomposed been eaten away and everything, because you've got rats, you got flies, you got maggots, you got any worms and everything. Yeah, so in some cases, you're not even finding bodies per se. You're finding like remnants of clothing and stuff like that. And if you've got bodies stacked on top of each other that are decomposing, all that stuff is just melding together into some like disgusting goo of whatever.
Right.
So the exact numbers is not exact. The exact number is not official because you just don't know.
Yeah, it's just an estimate. It's just an estimate.
Yeah. And it's funny because I think I told you about that one thing where they did that report because it was following the trail of people like crossing the border into Mexico. And there's this one area that, it's just hot, flat land. People would die there. They just couldn't go any further. They would just die there, but there were never any bodies.
Right.
Yeah. They knew that people died there, but there was never any bodies. But what they would find though was like a shit ton of like suitcases and backpacks and stuff like that, but no bodies. And they were like, well, where are the bodies? Like, well, maybe animals were eating them. Like, but yeah, but even animals would only eat so much. Like, happening? Like, we should find bones or something there.
Right. Yeah.
So they did these tests and everything. And they were like, they had a couple of guys. Medical pigs and everything. And they dressed them in clothing. And put them out there, these dead pigs, and put them out there, and they put one just out there, like, in the sun, and then the other ones they put, like put rocks on as if they were, kind of, like, burying it or something.
Yeah.
And then they set these cameras, these, motion sensor cameras with night vision to watch them, and what they found was that it was this hierarchy of carrion, so you would have, like, any kind of, like, wild dogs and wolves or whatever it was, you know, mountain lions, they would come in that would like rip and strip the clothing off of like the bodies. They would eat like a bunch of like the flesh.
Right. Yeah.
And then you would get, after they were done, you would get smaller animals like that would come in and eat.
Yeah.
You would get the birds during the day that would peck and everything. And so, and then you would get like beetles and things like that would get some of the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Get in the crevices and stuff.
Right. But what they found was that the ones that were, I think, I gotta make sure I get this right. The ones that were left, I think, in the sun, like, those were eaten slower than the ones that were covered up because, like, it kind of preserved them or something. Anyway, but the thing that they found, like, really fascinating, the reason they couldn't find any bones was because the ants would come after everything else was done and the bones had been stripped, like, bare, right? The ants would come and would take the bones apart, like, piece by piece, like, you know, ant-sized morsel until there was nothing there. And that's why they could never find any skeletons.
Interesting.
That's crazy, right?
Yeah, that's insane.
So, same thing here. Like, you've got worms, you've got flies, you've got maggots, you've got rats, you've got other, like, insects and things that are burrowing through. Because, again, as these pipes are deteriorating, you've just got earth on the other side of them. So, all those things are getting in there. And then, of course, you've got ants.
Right, yeah.
So, you may not even find any bones. Or if you do, like, I found part of a leg bone or an arm bone, but, like, what am I going to sit here and, like, jigsaw that to this other one? Like, see how many?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it goes to anything. The DNA testing wasn't really a thing, but you can only do DNA testing if you have something to test it with.
Sure.
We're not going to get DNA from everybody in Detroit to see who this bone might belong to. I mean, if you did, hell, I mean, it could be someone from out of town. You know, so you just have pieces of whatever. Like, I don't know if this goes to anything or anybody. So again, no exact, numbers on the number of bodies there. So they find all these bodies there in this, in these sewer things, and it's like, what the fuck? So then it gets even worse. So this is where things kind of take this, like, it's already taking a dark turn. They take a darker turn.
Really?
So you've got your forensics, like, pathologists or whatever down there, they're trying to catalog and get some of these things, whatever it is they can get, so they can take it back to the lab and study. And again, this is early 80s, so it's not like they've got the best equipment there to do that, but they're trying to at least figure out if we can determine if there's anything here. I've got a piece of flesh here, maybe, or like something like, it can help me identify. It's an identifying mark, whatever. They're taking bits of clothing back
to see
if they can like identify anything. So while they're down there, you've also have sewer workers that are down there too, right? And because, you know, once all is said and done, they've got to just, they've got to fill these things in or whatever. So then you started getting, or supposedly, people were reporting hearing things in some of these different, like, abandoned, like, tunnels.
Mm.
There are reports, again, nothing officially documented, right? Just what was supposed to be told to somebody or whatever. Because from what I understand, there's no official record of any of these tunnels.
Right.
Anybody been looking into the tunnels, any investigation. Like, the most I could find was that there was a newspaper article about the abandoned tunnels, like, and that the, that they were, there was some, like hazardous material found in them, because you can't hide, like, people, like, you know, in hazmat suits going in there. Of course, you've got the whole place lit up and you've got, you know, like the, you got them all roped off and stuff. That there was hazardous material found in there and that they were they were looking into, like, how it got there or what it was, or, you know, if it was originally there and that's why these parts were closed up, whatever it is, right? But there was, like, a small article about that, but it didn't go into detail about what it was or anything else. That's the most that I could find as far as an official accounting of this.
Right, right.
Unofficial accounts, right? That were just like little things there, that I just like people like, I was told this or I read this or like there was something here that you could never trace back to a source.
Yeah.
But unofficial accounts were that, so many people were hearing sounds down there. So you've got some people that are down there that are working, you know, working alone or working in small groups and everything. But they would hear noises. And that they would hear sounds like at the, like maybe at the far end of like where they were working, that would sound like crying. Some people reported that they heard what sounded like begging or pleading, not necessarily like specific words, but like whimpering and like, you know, where we like would maybe sound like please or don't or something like that.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah. So, and then they would go down there and there's nothing there. And of course, it's closed off on an end, right?
Right.
So if you could go down to, or you shine a light down there and there's nothing there, but they were hearing these sounds.
Mm.
Or it'd be one that you would go around a corner, you would hear things like, you know, supposedly some people heard like actual, like, please don't, I'm sorry, begging. And they were like, who's down there? Whatever. And they were getting it and there's nothing.
Oh, jeez.
There was one that I, so there were two. There were two that I read that I thought were really interesting. And again, I wish there was something that was kind of on record. You know, that someone said, even if it was just like a report, like a newspaper report that this person said that, whether it was true or not, but it was like in an actual like newspaper article or something, but I couldn't find anything. I did find one thing, and I'll tell about that in a minute. But again, that's not definitive because of something else. But there was supposedly some of the hazmat workers that were working there. And they're down there, they're cleaning up different areas and stuff. And of course, you know, they're, you know, as the forensic people are working, like, I can't get anything more from this area. Like here, like this area is done. Right. There's nothing else we can collect from here. And then they're kind of like, I guess, scrubbing or cleaning that part or, you know, whatever it is that they're doing. Is assessing like the stability of it or whatever. Cause I think they were either going to fill it up with dirt or fill it up with like concrete or whatever it was. I don't know.
Yeah.
But from my understanding is, they weren't going to dig it up. They were going to haul stuff in there and then just pack it or whatever. But so that some of these workers, they'd be down there and they're in these suits. They would come out and they'd have to go through a decontamination, just like if you worked in like nuclear or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
And of course, this is happening in various parts of this, of Detroit, like, you know, not necessarily like located very close to one another. It could be like a couple miles away. You're talking about a big city, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That there was a particular worker that when they were going through decontamination and they're being scrubbed and something hosed down and stuff, they had these bruises on their back. And someone like they, what happened? Did you fall down or whatever? And like you bump into something? They're like, no, like, what are you talking about? It's like, you've got these bruises on your back. And it was like, it was not like a handprint or anything, but it was these identifiable, like this bruise pattern.
Right, right.
Nothing. Like they didn't feel anything. They didn't fall, nothing, but during this, there was a bruise pattern. In some of the other locations, other hazmat workers had that exact same bruise pattern on them in the same spot.
Wow.
But in different, but they were working in different locations. They'd never been to that one spot.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had, and they didn't feel anything. That, but it was like when they're being, like, you know, when they're going through the, again, they're being scrubbed and hosed down and stuff like that. They were like, oh, hey, you've been hurt. And it, that was kind of like a source file that, or something that said, like, this was reported more than once because sure, they're yeah. like, you know, like, oh, that's unusual. And then there was this like, oh, there were multiple people that had this bruise pattern that were all from different locations and didn't work together.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was on the same spot on their body.
Same spot on their body, huh. on their back. It was like a back, like shoulder blade or something like that.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
And it wasn't like a circular pattern, like a triangle, whatever. It was just like however those bruises were. Like, they had them all, and everyone has, and nobody took any pictures of it because it was like, okay, you've got this bruise, and then that's documented. Oh, yeah, he didn't fall down, but he's got a bruise. That, you know, I think there was some concern that it may have been like some kind of like, exposure to something that was creating like a cancer lesion, like whatever.
Causing some kind of coagulation or something.
Right.
Right. Right.
And then it's reported on somebody else too. And then when that's, you know, collected, it's like, oh, we've got multiple reports here and these aren't lining up.
Huh.
Now, could it have been some kind of like prank or conspiracy or something that amongst people that work together, like in the, you know, in the, sewage, but didn't work together on those jobs?
Right,
maybe,
right.
You know, or it could just not be anything.
Yeah.
So there was another story, and this is the one I found the most fascinating because this was in a article. And it was just a guy that said that, you know, he was one of the workers, the sewage workers that was there. And it was like, and it was the only one I could see that actually said that there was a body found, right? Hmm. It didn't say multiple, it said it was a body found.
Oh, right, right. Right.
Which, you know, obviously you could find it. I mean, if it was accessible to somebody, you could have like homeless people sleeping in there, right?
Yeah.
Whatever. So a body found. But this, and I'm just kind of summarizing here, cause I'm not gonna put all these different sources out cause they're not credible sources as far as I'm concerned.
I
consider it that I'm gonna say, oh yeah, you can find this here because it's not like a New York Times article. It's nothing like that it's official. So I'm not gonna,
like rumors on forums.
Yeah. Right. I'm not gonna like give more credence to what could just be a rumor or just something that somebody just wrote or whatever by sending a bunch of people there to it. But what I read was, this guy was talking, and he said, he was like, he was one of the workers there, and he was talking to the reporter, and this particular article started off with, God, I can't think of the damn word, but it was like for a previous article. So like, this is like a rescission or an update to a previous article, like, the story that we had posted like a week or so ago, like a couple days to a week ago.
Right.
Prior. So the story was, the guy was like, yeah, there was a body that was found down there and it's kind of funny. And they were asking like, well, do you know anything about the body? Or like, was it a homeless person? Like, does anybody know? He goes, I think that it was put there by the mafia.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what this guy said. And he said, he goes, I don't know for a fact, but this is my, he goes, I believe it was the body of, he gave some guy's name, and he said, when I was growing up, well, not growing up, but a couple years ago, there was a guy though in the neighborhood that was well known to be, that to deal with the mafia or like with the, like one of the, like the crime families. He, did like gambled and that kind of stuff was not very successful and, often owed a lot of money.
Right. Yeah.
And he was a, this is a guy that he did, he was like, a guy I knew through friends and everything that I was seeing occasionally and, you know, like after work. And I'm kind of filling some of this in because it was like a really short article. Like he gave like maybe two or three paragraphs, but they, you know, he would see, but it wasn't a close friend of his, but he would see hanging out with guys and everything, like his buddy at a bar. And the, but the guy would always brag about how much he was worth. He was like, you know, it's like, you know, my, he was like, my, he was like my bones are worth more than any of you people or whatever. And he would always kind of brag about like how much he was worth. Like, so the guy would say this stuff and because apparently he had some kind of degenerative, he had arthritis, some kind of degenerative joint disease.
Sure.
And he was going, he was doing this, therapy where they would inject gold into your joints. So they would inject these gold strands into the joints. And so this gold therapy, which is I guess at the time, like I'll pull it up here. Cause I was like, this is bullshit, right?
Yeah,
like,
that sounds like, crazy.
It was like, this is bullshit. But no, at the time that, and some people still, seek that kind of treatment, but see, I'm just going to do a quick Google search. I should have all this stuff pulled up here, but I wasn't expecting to go this deep into it. See, Google thread, so that's for, say, gold filament, for lift rejuvenation. There's another one that's facelift. Here it is. So, and like, this is not something that I think is done anymore, but so this is, I'm actually on a website. This is IntelliHealth. And this, the website is ihplus.com. Gold thread chronic pain therapy. Like 99.99% pure gold thread nano coating. Gold is a naturally inert material which makes it suitable for implantation into human body. The earliest gold implantation can be traced back to ancient Egypt where tiny pieces of gold were found embedded into the body of a 7,000-year-old Egyptian queens for rejuvenation purposes. Other archaeological findings reveal that the gold has been widely used in dentistry of ancient Egypt and gold leaves were found in some Egyptian mummies for unknown purposes. So gold thread biostimulation therapy for chronic pain management. SC21 gold thread is now implanted into acupuncture points to amplify the electrical potential of a particular set of acupuncture points and meridians, achieving pain relief by means of decongesting blockages in meridians. Yeah, that's what they say. Hmm. But in this thing here, it says anti-inflammatory. Gold itself is the best natural anti-inflammatory agents. Any kind of inflammation will subside in a few days following gold thread implantation. The efficacies, I've never seen this word before. It's obvious.
Efficacies, maybe?
EFFICACIES.
Yeah, that's efficacies.
Efficacies, like, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Is obvious in local, acne, other inflammatory diseases, or systemic joint pain, sinusitis, inflammatory disorders, whatever.
Hmm.
So, yeah, they would do that. Now, whether it actually helps or not, I don't know. But it says here under joint pain, gold thread can be implanted into any joints to relieve pain due to injuries, cumulative traumas, or arthritis with its anti-inflammatory and angiogenetic properties. Gold thread is usually implanted into acupuncture points around the affected joints. Gold thread has been proven clinically to improve many other chronic local systemic inflammatory disorders, e.g. spinal disorders, compression of nerves by bone spur or protruding disc, visual disorders, dry eye syndrome, myopia, presbyopia, glaucoma. I got glaucoma. I can't see too good. respiratory disorders, asthma, cough, pharyngitis, bronchitis, mild cardiomyopathy, facial nerve disorder. Anyway, so this is something that, this is right, maybe obviously a more current service, but this is something that's been done for a while.
Yeah, so even in this day and age, people are using like gold infusions or gold injections or whatever.
Right.
So that is very interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm pretty sure that shit don't work.
Right? I mean, I would have assumed not, but now hearing all that, it's like, well, I know that, like, I know people use copper for, like, joint pains. I know people use, like, colloidal silver for, like, mm-hmm. like internal health and digestive health and stuff, and, like, treating infections. So maybe, I don't know, like...
How long have you been going, by the way? Sorry.
An hour, 20 minutes.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
No, it's fine. But, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy. So, you know, in they're injecting it out. They're talking about acupuncture points. I think that back in like the 70s or whatever, 60s, 70s, that it probably like wasn't that specific. They were probably just taking needles with like, you know, something and just injecting it in there. And I was saying this guy that he said people that like he knew, like, you know, he would knew this guy, whatever. And I don't know, like, cause this guy, if it's true, like they stopped using the sewer system back in the '70s, just like the '80s now. So I don't know how closely affiliated this guy was, or if he even knew anything, or he could just be talking out of his ass. Right. But anyway, he was saying this guy was always bragging about that because he was getting these gold injections because he had like arthritis or whatever. So he was getting these gold injections. So he was like, yeah, like, you know, my bones are worth more than all of you guys, whatever. It doesn't matter if I've got a dollar in my pocket, I'm still worth more than all of you because he's got these gold injections. Right. So apparently, as this guy says, the last time he was seen, he, like, it was kind of well known that this guy was a bad gambler, would owe money, and apparently the last time he was seen, he owed a lot of money. The last time anyone officially saw him was he was with one of the neighborhood guys who was known in air quotes around the neighborhood, you know, as a collection agent for one of the local mafia, you know, like affiliates, you know, like their little sub like things. Anyway, he was seen in his presence and then was never seen again. He's like, he never thought much about it and everything because like he wasn't something that he associated with. The word was that the guy owed a lot of money and money he knew he couldn't pay. Right, and most people believed he just skipped out. But the last time he was seen was in the presence of this guy I guess it was assumed that the guy was like, hey, you need to pay up kind of thing. Huh. So, but he said he was down there and he's never thought anything of it, but he was down there in the sewer and, you know, there was this decomposed body and like the clothes are mostly like, you know, been just deteriorated and they're just rotting away. But there was a partial bone, I assume like a leg bone, but it was a partial bone. And the thing that caught his eye was there was something amongst all the stuff that was glinting. And when he looked at it, he saw what was like a gold thread wrapped around the end of this one bone. And that all made everything come flooding back to him. So he's like, that's an odd thing to see. It's like, how would someone wrap that around? And then it's just like, bam.
Yeah.
It took him all the way back there. And then like the rumors of what this place was, the last time this guy was seen, and then like who would have this? Oh.
Uh-huh.
This guy is like, but the article though wasn't the interview with him. It was I keep saying rescission, but that's not the word I'm looking for. But anyway, it was basically, they were pulling back from that original article. The supposed sewer worker came back to newspaper and said that what he had told them previously was not true. He did not know such of a guy. He had never actually been in that sewer, in that tunnel. Like he did work for the city and he was in like the sewer maintenance, but he had been on that site, but hadn't actually been down in there, and that he had not seen anybody, did not know of any bodies that were found down in there. And that the supposed guy that he was talking about, he had made up. So they're like, we're recanting the story here, right? You know, after a week, because this guy came back and said, I lied about all of this.
Interesting.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Because I'm like, oh, shit. Like, you just basically said the mafia did this. They got word. You used your name. And they were like, yeah.
Yeah. So he, of course, needed to, like, back out of it.
Right. And that was the last. And then that's the only thing, again, that I could find anything of. And it's like, it's, you know, it's like a page three thing, you know, like, you know, they always print accusations on page one. They always print apologies on page 10.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but again, I don't know. It was like the, it wasn't even something like the Detroit Gazette. It was something like that. It was some kind of like the Michigan Horn, some kind of local people like that, that apparently is not even around anymore. Don't know how real that article was or anything else, but I read that and I was wow.
So sort of like a pre-tabloid type thing, like the working man's voice or whatever.
Yeah, something, or just was like, it was like a small town rag that eventually got swallowed up by bigger newspapers. Like, you know, but yeah, so that was apparently back in, this guy said that, and then it was like immediately, like almost a week later, or like, it may not have been that long. It could have been like 4 or 5 days, was like, nope, that didn't happen. I lied. You know, I apologize. And I was like, wow.
Very interesting.
But supposedly, And the thing is, like, and, you know, we talked about the mafia and part of the thing about them is that, you know, they keep so much stuff close to the vest, you know, because they're like, you know, obviously we're not going to the only way that we are successful in doing what we do is by not letting shit get out.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, like, everything about this is there's no official record of any of this stuff taking place. You can't find anything. I think if it is true, it really gave the city a black eye, because the last thing you want is to know that the, you know, whatever the local crime family is, has been doing all this under your nose for years. And then you find out about this. They've just been dumb always by it. And then you can't even tell, like, who it was or whatever. It could be people that you've been looking for years. And like,
right.
And like, and the thing is, if I can't identify anybody, I don't know what it is. I don't know who it put there. I got no leads. Why not just pretend it didn't exist?
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like,
sweep it under the rug.
Right. And so like I said, so the mafia, like, the, if they are involved, you know, involvement at all, like, the thing is that they exist and they're successful what they're doing by letting as little information out as possible and making sure that anybody that knows anything doesn't talk about it through one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the story of the Detroit Partnership Graveyard, which of course now there's no way you can look anything up, because if any of those places, like, so now Detroit is completely changed from where it was in the '80s.
Right,
so if
right.
there were any of those places, they've been completely dug up. And at the time, if they filled them in with concrete or dirt or whatever it is, like, 10, 15 years later, you could dig all that stuff up, no problem.
Sure.
Plus,
yeah.
If you never told anybody what you did, and then someone says, oh, well, I'm going to go build an X on this place. Like, okay. I'm not going to say anything about it. Like, if there's anything officially on the books, I'm not going to say anything. You dig that up. You deal with whatever mess you find there. If you find anything, right?
Yeah.
And then, but once you're done, it's gone.
Yeah.
Like, so even my cover up no longer exists.
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that is amazing. And amazing in a horrible way.
Right, but right.
That is fucking amazing.
That's crazy, yeah.
And I mean, like, it just, it's interesting that you could, if you could do something like that, first off, you're hiding, if it's true, you're hiding all this stuff there in plain sight. It's all right there, yeah, kind of in plain sight. Like, like, these are your abandoned sewers that we're doing all this stuff in, right? And you're not even aware that we're using, like, it's like putting shit into my backyard.
Right, right.
And then, like, it goes on for so long that if they do find out about it, right, it's like, well, you can't do anything about it now because it's going to make you look bad. And it's, and any kind of, like, evidence you have is not evidence enough to do anything to me about. So the only thing you can do now is finish the job of covering up my crime.
I mean, what's worse about it is that, you know, there's a history with politicians and their interactions with the mafia and with the Cosa Nostra and all mm-hmm. that. So, I mean, like, there's nothing saying that the mayor at the time didn't know that that's what they were doing, and he was just being paid off to keep quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, there's a lot that could go on with that. You know, I remember a few years back reading that there was, like, a real brief stint for, like, several years, probably around that same time, where, like, homeless people were just sort of going missing.
Mm-hmm.
And it became, like, a real thing. It's sort of like, you know, with our area, we had the confession killer, where he would just confess to every crime.
Right.
And then they realized that it was like, oh, every time he confesses, we give him a day off, which is why he keeps confessing. It's that kind of thing. So it's like they were just, like, actively looking for reasons to close out cases. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if this doesn't go a lot deeper, but there's so many dead ends to it that it could be... Yeah. Really, really hard to find anything.
Didn't Henry Lee Lucas do that? Like, every time they were going to convict him, he was like, oh, I can tell you where some more bodies are.
Yeah.
And sometimes he actually did take him to more bodies, and then other times it was like just a wild goose chase.
Sometimes, but what was funny and what detectives talked about with that is that they would, like, walk in and he'd just be in the case room studying over the cases with, like, a pack of Camels and a cup of coffee. And so then he would stroll into the room and be like, I'm ready to confess. And so he would, like, hand him the case book and they'd be like, all right, tell us all about it. And he'd be like, yeah, I believe it happened around 3 p.m. And they're like, oh, do you mean 4 p.m.? 4 p.m. It happened around 4 p.m. Like, it was bad. It was really bad.
Yeah, just doing whatever they can to close a case, right?
Yeah, so, because it made them look really good. That it's like, oh, we've closed more cases this year than, like, the last 5 years.
Like, you're already in jail, prison for life. You've got the death sentence penalty. Like, there's nothing more we can do to you. You're never leaving this place unless it's in a box. So why not? Like, you can get steak for, like, the next, like, month or so, you know, if you just go ahead and just own up to this. That way we can close these cases and everybody can they walk away happy.
Yeah, I mean, that was exactly it. So, you know, I seem to remember, as far as, like, Detroit goes, that there was something with, like, homeless people going missing and they were trying really hard to just, like, sweep it under the rug and do what they could to close out what existing cases there were.
Well, you know that story about the women that ran, like, the boarding house, right?
That rings a bell.
These women that ran this boarding house, and they would take in these homeless people, and they would clean them up and kind of, like give them jobs around the house, something like that, and then take out insurance policies on them, and, like, a couple months later, they would kill them. They would run them over with a car, whatever, and be like, oh, and then they were collecting on the insurance.
Yep.
And I mean, that's just evil. It's one thing to get evil shit like that from a young person, but from an old person?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, no.
You're supposed to be, like, you know, setting an example for the youth.
Right.
But we talk about that, though. We talk about, like, all the old people that are like, you know, like, back in my day, this is how we did this, this is how we did that, only come to find out that, like, oh, no, like, back in your day, you did shit worse than we ever did, and now you're just trying to high road everybody.
Yeah.
But I was like, and I wish I could actually bring something new. Well, okay, so I say I wish I could bring something new, but the truth is, again, Steve, like you mentioned that one guy, the YouTube guy, was Winnie the Pooh. What is his name?
Wendigoon?
No, not Wendigoon. Somebody else you mentioned.
Hugbees.
Okay. So, like, those people like that, if there was something new to be told about this kind of a story, they would have already hit upon it, right?
So,
there's no way I could bring something new that I'd be like, oh, hey, here's a story you haven't heard of that is well documented. Cause if it's well documented, they probably already tackled it.
Yeah.
Right? Cause that's what they do. So, but this right here is just something that it could be a, like, I for one think it's true because it's, what was they saying, that thing, the absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence, right? Uh-huh. But there is, sometimes you can, if there's a story about something, oftentimes you can find something that's enough to just say, this is bullshit. Like, here's a story and here's where it's been debunked. Here's where it's not true, or something. Or like, oh yeah, this has been floating around for a while or whatever. But instead, when I tried to look up this story, and maybe I'm just not looking it up properly, but from everything I know, when I tried to look up this story, all I kept finding were dead ends.
Right.
It was so, like, there was so little information on it that it made me question it even more. Like, why is it that I can't find anything on it? I didn't make this up. Like, I remember hearing this from somewhere, and then, you know, I wanted to look at it further. So like, oh, hey, this might be something, like, it just popped in my head. Like, oh, hey, this might be something cool to talk about on the podcast. And then when I went looking for more information, it was strange how little there was on it to make me be like, there's got to be something more on it, even if it's just to say this is bullshit.
Right.
And
right.
That kind of sent me down this path of like, that's really odd.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to a lot as far as like, you know, these kinds of events, but I know as far as like lost media and stuff, because like animation really fascinates me, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I know as far as like lost media and stuff, some things are really, really easy to find, but when it's like really, really dark shit, stuff that like genuinely causes chaos or like really causes kids to like be scared to the point of hurting themselves, that kind of thing, that gets scrubbed real, real thoroughly.
Yeah.
But then like inevitably it's always like 10 or 15 years later where it's like, oh yeah, like the man in the clock or whatever, totally real. And it's like, oh shit.
The man in the clock?
Something like that. I can't remember. Oh. It's
so, I mean, in along those lines, right? Because, you know, this will, and I have to keep prefacing it like this way. If this is true, this will eventually come out one day. Someone's got records. No one ever destroys anything completely, right?
Right, right.
Someone's got records of this. And if this is true, it will eventually come out one day. I don't know when, but it will eventually come out one day. But, I want to share with you, just real quick here. I didn't realize it was so late.
Mm-hmm.
And, anyway, I just didn't realize, excuse me. I didn't realize it was so late, but, I want to share this with you too, because this kind of goes to, you know, what we're talking about here. As far as, you know, wrapping this up here, which is, hold on. What's the name of that? It's a movie. It's, Is it the man who shot Nixon? And I came across this movie one day, and I was just like, okay. The Assassination of Richard Nixon. There we go. It's got my boy Don Cheadle in it. So let me see. I'm going to go to the actual, this is the movie. I'm going to go to the actual story, of this guy here. That way I can, instead of just the dramatization of it, go to the real story. Okay. So this guy, Samuel Bick, the last name is spelled B-Y-C-K. He was born 1930, died February 1974. An American hijacker and attempted assassin. On February 22nd, 1974, he attempted to hijack a plane flying out of Baltimore, Washington International Airport, intending to crash into the White House in the hopes of killing President Richard Nixon. During the incident, Bick killed a policeman and a pilot, but was shot and wounded by another policeman before committing suicide. He was on the plane. He shot him through the window on the door.
Shit.
The door shut. And that's a pretty thick window. He shot him through that and killed him. In 1972, he began to suffer from severe bouts of depression after his wife divorced him and several job-related financial failures. He admitted himself into a psychiatric ward for a 2-month stay. He began to harbor the belief that the Nixon administration was conspiring to oppress the poor. That was true. Bike came to the notice of the Secret Service in 1972 when he threatened Nixon, whom he had resented since the Small Business Administration had turned down his loan application. He also sent tape recordings to various other public figures, including scientist Jonas Salk. Isn't that the guy that created polio vaccine?
Oh, I couldn't tell you, dude.
I'm pretty sure it is. Like, Jonas Salk, tells a miracle worker when, so for the next 7 years, Salk devoted himself, to developing a vaccine against polio. That's what I thought. Yeah. Well, I mean, Captain America's pretty happy about that. You know, it's like, remember when he's talking to Black Widow about the time, he's like, you know, it's like, it seems like, you know, no more polio. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
So Jonas Salk, Senator Abraham, Ribicoff of Connecticut and composer Leonard Bernstein, and had tried to join the Black Panthers. This is a white guy, right? So that's him right there. Not quite sure if you really thought that part through, but it sounded like a lot of what he did, he didn't really think through.
Seems like kind of an impetuous type.
So the Secret Service considered him to be harmless and no action was taken at that time. In early 1974, he made his decision to assassinate Nixon and started to stalk him and follow his movements via news outlets. He planned to do so by hijacking an airliner and crashing it into the White House on a day when Nixon would be there. It has been suggested, for instance, in the movie dramatization, that he was inspired by news reports of the buzzing of the White House by U.S. Army soldier Robert K. Preston in a stolen UH-1B Huey helicopter on February 17th. Since he was already known to the Secret Service and because legal attempts to purchase a firearm may have resulted in increased scrutiny, he stole a .22 caliber revolver from his friend to use in the hijacking. He also made a bomb out of 2 gallon jugs of gasoline and an igniter. All through this process, he made audio recordings explaining his motives and his plans. He expected to be considered a hero for his actions and wanted to fully document his reasons for the assassination. So then that day, he goes to the airport, he goes to the airport and he shot and killed, an Aviation Administration policeman before storming onto the DC-9L airline, which he chose because it was the closest flight that was ready to take off. There were two pilots there, immediately complied with his orders and calmly tried to reassure him that they would cooperate. Then the one pilot told them they could not take off with the doors open to the aircraft, doors of the aircraft open, then alerted the control tower and summoned police assistance when he left to go close the doors. After the pilots told him they could not take off until the wheel blocks were removed, he shot them both and grabbed a nearby passenger to order her to fly the plane. So again, now we're thinking things through. He died as he was being...
Can you imagine? You there, fly this plane! It's like, I don't fucking know how to fly a plane!
So the one pilot died as he was being removed from the aircraft after the event was concluded. The other one survived the attack. So this guy, Bike, told a flight attendant to close the door or he would blow up the plane. Anne Arundel County Police Department officer attempted to shoot out the tires of the aircraft to prevent the takeoff, but the .38 caliber bullets fired from the police issued Smith & Wesson failed to penetrate the aircraft's tires and ricocheted off. That's some shit, yo.
That's pretty wild.
After the standoff between him and the police on the jetway, one of the county police officers fired 4 shots through the aircraft door with a .357 Magnum taken from the one deceased police officer he shot. Shot him through the door. 2 of the shots penetrated the thick window of the aircraft and wounded him. Before the police could gain entry, he committed suicide by shooting himself in the head. It says here, according to a Special History Channel, he lived for a few minutes, dying after saying, "Help me," to one of the policemen who entered the plane after he'd been shot. Shot yourself in the... Okay.
I'm not going to help you.
Yeah, like you shouldn't have shot yourself in the head. First off, you shouldn't have done any of this shit. But you shouldn't have shot yourself in the head and be like, "Help me." Like, we can't stuff your brains back in your head, kid. A briefcase containing the gasoline bomb was found under his body. The plane never left the gate, and Nixon's schedule was not affected by the attempted assassination, although he was in the White House at the time. It was subsequently discovered that he had sent a tape recording detailing his plan, which he called Operation Pandora's Box, to a news columnist, Jack Anderson. A review of records disclosed that he had been arrested twice for protesting in front of the White House without a permit, and that he later dressed in a Santa Claus suit for another protest. It says here, FAA document titled Troubled Passage, the Federal Aviation Administration during the Nixon-Ford term, 1973-1977, was produced, which mentioned Bic's failed hijacking, though Bic lacked the skill and self-control to reach his target, he had provided a chilling reminder of the potential of violence against civil aviation. Under a more relaxed security system, his suicidal rampage might have begun when the airliner was aloft. After his failed assassination attempt and subsequent death, he faded into relative obscurity, except among members of security organizations. However, one of the long-term consequences of his failed kidnapping was that it helped spur along several other failed and successful hijackings, the implementation of new security measures for airline airports. And it also comes up in the 9/11 Commission report. There was something that, as I understand it, let's see if I can find it here. There was something I remember reading about how this, about how his, they didn't release the details of his plan because they didn't want other people to try to imitate, to do that.
Even
though the White House is a no-fly zone, they didn't want people to imitate that. So it wasn't until years later that they said, like, this guy tried to hijack this plane, but as to where he was trying to go and what he was trying to do, that wasn't, that's, I remember reading that somewhere, that it wasn't released until years later, what it was, because they didn't want to spur along copycats.
Interesting.
So again, so, you know, kind of following that same vein, and, you know, which is other stuff that, you know, like, oh, now we can finally reveal after, you know, which I think is kind of bullshit, and that's a whole another podcast topic, how when you've got things that are bad, and people in the public wants to know, like, I want to know the truth about this. We want to know the truth about this. And they're like, okay, we'll tell you in 30 years. We want to wait till all the involved parties are dead. Like, fuck that. No, I want them to be held accountable now.
Right.
You know, wait till they're all, dead to do this. Like, I want them to be held accountable now. Like, telling me afterwards and everything. Yes, that's great. Now we know the truth. But, like, what the fuck am I going to do about it?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so, but again, if this is true, which I believe is, I wholeheartedly believe this is, if this is true, this will come out eventually. Someone's got files and records and everything on this. And once they, you know, once they feel that, you know, I guess enough time has passed or there's interest in it or, you know, principal characters, you know, are completely gone, the story is going to be told.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm kind of waiting for that day. And you know, and it may be one of those things that maybe it may never come because it involves La Cosa Nostra. And you're like, even if we told it nowadays, when all those people that may have been involved are dead, it's still pointing at, you know, at the mafia, right? And they may still kind of, you know, take offense to that. I don't want to say I feel secure in, you know, telling the story, but I feel okay because I don't know any facts about anything. I'm just going off of what I know. And as I've said, there's this entire thing here. Like, this is just what I've read and kind of what I've been able to piece together. I don't know if it's true. I believe it's true, but like, I don't know anything. I have no definitive proof of anything. If I did, I would definitely say I've got definitive proof, but I got nothing there. And everything that I've come across here, you can find yourself by just doing by doing a good bit of research.
Right.
So I feel comfortable and like, I'm not going to have anybody coming after me to be like, you shouldn't have told this story because I haven't really implicated anybody. And I haven't said definitively that this happened, just that I believe that it happened. But I do think that, you know, I honestly think that one day, I think this is true and it's going to come out. Someone's going to have some kind of documented proof. You may not have, like, again, keeping the bodies doesn't mean shit because, like, the state of decay or whatever they were in, you're never going to be able to determine who they were or anything else. Even from, like, any scraps of fabric or whatever you found, unless you found a wallet, which I doubt you would do that. Like, you're not going to find anything to really be able to, you're not going to have anything to be able to say this is who these people were. So yeah, disposing of that, fine, but there's got to be something to say that says during this time period, we discovered this. and this is what was done, right. and we close it up like this because there was nothing we could do. I think that that story's out there.
Yeah, no doubt. All right.
So yeah, that's it. And
that was super interesting.
I thought it was, and I kind of wish when I first heard about it that I had kind of done a little bit more, like looked into it a little bit further, because I probably would have been able to find more information about it. But it was just one of those things that I was like, yeah, okay, and then I'll just, you know, whatever, I'll just let it go. And sure. Then when it came back there, I was like, hey, that could be an interesting story, but
yeah,
that's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. I didn't want to like interrupt you or anything, or like try to riff on it too much. I just wanted to hear the story.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you do the same thing with me. You're like, I've got a story and everything. I want to tell you on podcast. I want to get your honest reaction to it. So I don't tell you, don't tell me too much about it. But
yeah,
you know, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah,
it's about what I can say. It's interesting.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, folks, you're probably not going to learn about it on like 4chan or Reddit. You're probably going to have to do some like deeper dives. But
Anybody out there that is listening to this, you know, if you want to do your own research, whatever, I welcome that. I wholeheartedly welcome that. But I'll just say, or if, you know, you find out something else, I mean, I just want to know the story. I want to know the story. So I don't give a shit who reports and everything. I just want to know the story. So if you guys go and like start looking around or doing whatever and everything, like, dude, they need, you can hit us up and be like, hey, I got the story. You can just post it somewhere, and eventually it'll reach us in some weird like fashion. But hey, if you guys know somebody or somebody knows somebody or something like that, dude, I'd love to know more about this, because it's kind of been, like I say, it's been in the back of my mind for a while. And now that I've done this much, it's kind of really there. Like, I really want to know kind of where this all led.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's it. And I hate to say it, but we might have to turn this into a two-parter, because it is kind of long.
It's 2 hours. We're doing a two-parter.
Yeah, and it's a heavy, heavy subject too.
Yeah. I mean, we are at an hour 52 minutes. Like, by the time we give our little outro and stuff, it'll be an hour 55. Yeah, it's going to be a two-parter.
I felt the need to kind of start off with the foundation of the partnership, because there's no way you'd be able to do something like this if you didn't have all of the crime families in that city working together.
Sure. Yeah.
You wouldn't be.
Yeah.
So, which I also think is kind of fascinating. Just like, instead of fighting over this, like, you're going to get what you get. You'll get your share, whatever. But this works out for everybody, because now we're not fighting amongst each other. We're not killing each other. We're not fighting over territory, and then letting someone else come in and pick up the pieces.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that's kind of interesting too. But yeah. So that's the story there. My name is Turkman82.
And I am Akomi.
So thank you all very much for checking us out. And hope you stay and listen to some other episodes. The other ones, I swear, will be like less horrifying and much funnier.
Well, Turk, thank you for sharing this and for doing the research on this. Because, you know, me and my attention span, like, if it ain't about aliens or whatever, then I get real easily distracted. So I do appreciate you, putting in the time for this one.
No, it's cool. I mean, I really, like I said, it was one of those things where, you know me, like, if something kind of strikes me the right way, I will just, like, sink my teeth in, and I'll just keep digging and digging and digging and digging and digging. I'm sometimes to the point where it's not healthy, because, like, there's this thing in me where I, like, if I feel that this out there, it's one of those things, it's kind of like a gambler, like playing the slots. It's like, you know, like, no, next turn I'm going to get it. No, next turn. It's like the next click, that's going to be what I'm looking for. No, the next is going to be what I'm looking at. No, the next click is going to be what I'm looking for. And I keep going along that path. And then next thing you know, like, I'm so far, not even down the rabbit hole, but I'm so far away. Like, when you get to, like, I don't know, page 20, of like Google, like, for whatever it is that you search for, like, you're not going to find anything even closely related to whatever it is you're looking for by page 20. Like, actually, right. You should give up by page 5. Really. So, but
most, like, people give up by page 2. But yeah.
So, like, under the belief that I was going to find something, I just kept going, kept digging. Like I said, to the point where it was, you know, it's kind of unhealthy. But I was hoping I was going to find something more. And I didn't really find anything more, but I think what I found still kind of, paints the picture. And it took me a while even to get that much, but But, you know, like I said, somebody that hasn't heard this before will probably be able to pick it up, or maybe they heard a little bit, be able to pick it up and just find the rest of it, which would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, if that's all, then I have been a Comey.
And again, I'm Turk1A2.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and goodbye.
Zang, yo.
All right there, folks, that was Our Moms Think We're Funny. Let's give them a hand.